This guy saw the field early and often, one of the most experienced in the KF era, a crucial part of the offensive line over the past four seasons. He and his class, as you'll hear, have been through a lot that culminated in this year's running attack with Caleb Johnson and being one of the best in the Big Ten in the country. Mason Richmond joins the show, had a fantastic one-on-one with Mason. You guys will love it as well. Let's have a day. Let's go. Again, another Wash Up Walk-Ons podcast, another one of the recent graduates from the University of Iowa football team, offensive lineman Mason Richmond joins the show today. And this guy's been through it over at the University of Iowa. He's got the, I think Mason, it says here, you've got the most starts as a KF era offensive lineman. Did you know that?
I was aware of that in, I think, November when it was starting to come up. So there's good and bad reasons for that, but.
Well, good point. Good point. Yeah. We'll get into some of that because it's an interesting part of your story and not just your story, but really your class and the guys around you, thrown in the fire a little bit and went through a lot of adversity. And, I don't know, maybe in your words, you can talk about it a little bit, but maybe thrown out there a little too early. I don't know. Like, there were obviously over the last couple of years, not so much this past season, you guys crushed us last season, but there were some growing pains. Had a new offensive line coach come in basically right after you came in. A lot of things happened. I'll stop talking. I'll let you talk. But how does that all look in your brain now after the fact?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of clump it all together, I feel like. Obviously we had a coordinator switch this season, which kind of changed a lot of things. And, I mean, this past season was a couple of years in itself, it felt like, you know, the three before that I was able to be a part of, you know, actually in the lineup, kind of all seemed clumped together, at least 22 and 23, definitely. There was a lot of struggles there. And like you said, we were kind of thrown in the fire, but I don't know if there's ever an easy time or a best time for someone to go in. So, you know, for us, it was just about like, I mean, there's nothing we can do about it. Like we're the best option we have right now. Like we got to help the team win. That was the biggest thing. And when you, like, I remember, you know, my second year, I was already a first row guy of the offensive side of the room. And that was like wild to me. Like, cause you know, normally it's like the five starters and then kind of the backups and some of the younger guys are in the second and third rows or sometimes like up by the coaches, but you know, just getting thrown into that and things of that nature, just really, you know, put into perspective, I hope.
Yeah. So, and that's a fun little insight. What Mason's talking about there for anybody that doesn't know, and I didn't really have this in the specialist room because there's only one room. But in the bigger rooms, especially like the line rooms, there's multiple rows to the meeting room. And even more so in the team meeting room on the offensive, defensive side of the ball, your veteran guys, usually the starters, are going to be up front. Special teams meeting was really maybe the pinnacle of this. You have a punt meeting, Woods and Wallace, they got like six deep at every position. And so you literally sit, we had it to where there were 11 seats in the front row. And then the twos would be right behind them. And when you're, I remember the first, I fortunately got to start my second year after a senior graduated. And so I remember that same moment. You sit down in the, you get the depth chart. Probably down on the bulletin board or whatever, and then you go into the meeting room and you sit down in the seat and you're like, it almost, you feel a little bit of power. It's like a Thanos thing. You're like, oh yeah, this comes with responsibility. Was it similar for you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when I first got there, I remember I'm just a sponge, especially for like older guys. Like that's who I look up to the most all the time. And that first year in 2020. I don't remember if we were, I don't think we were really spaced out. We might have had to wear a mask or something. The team.
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah.
But like I sat as close as I could, like as close as I could get without pissing off an older guy and like causing a ruckus or something like that. Yeah. But like that first year I sat right behind like the furthest left seat and right behind the first five or whatever or so. in that first row. So, you know, obviously, like, that was just what I got thrown into. And I guess I've just been kind of used to it, you know, just being an older guy for a while now. So
You've been there a while now. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Like, that was a long 5 years. And, you know, there's a ton of maturity. Like, I think I've grown up more. I was thinking about it, you know, before coming on. I'm like, I don't know what to say about my growth, because I feel like my senior year of high school, I really grew a lot. And then I somehow either grew more here or just kind of continued that, I'd say. Just because, like, senior, you know, high school, I was kind of a hothead definitely early on and just had to learn my ways. And then I probably was a hothead early on in Iowa and just learned quicker, you know, how to handle it and stuff like that. So,
oh, well, we got a couple things in common then. if you walked back into the facility right now and asked them about me, they'd probably tell you, yeah, he's a little bit of a, that's why he's doing podcasts now.
I've heard the name before, definitely. Coach Woods and Coach Walls have dropped the name before, definitely.
Oh shit, here we go.
And I think Coach Brian did in a couple of unit meetings.
Great. I don't know what Brian saying about me. Holy shit.
Yeah.
He was usually, it was fun because with the specialists, the relationship with the other like position coaches is normally just like a complete like back and forth. You're just giving each other shit 100% of the time.
Yeah.
Right. Like, cause the only one that really matters is like Coach Woods. He, as long as he has control of the specialists and everything is going well, then the specialists are just like, they're quite literally the jesters of the team. They're just like, if this was a castle and like the king and queen, like they're just the jesters that run around. People give them shit. If someone needs to blow off some steam, they just shit on the specialists. It is what it is.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what those guys are saying. I know that, I get a text from Woods or Wallace every once in a while that they're listening to a certain episode. So maybe I'll get a text about this one.
No, one thing I would add about that is, you know, I got up here and other schools, I guess, hate their specialists. And
oh yeah. Yeah.
I didn't know that. You know, I've only grown up like, we love these guys. Like, obviously the fans love the punter every year, with Tori and Reese, and you know, the kickers have been historic and everything like that. And,
okay, well, so it wasn't always that way, dude. Like,
really?
So, I mean, first of all, Tori was another level, right?
Sure, like, obviously.
And now Reese, a little bit of the same. And I don't think we've gotten to see, hopefully we do, Reese come out of his shell and sort of do more interviews. As he gets older, we'll get to, but I don't know if we're going to get that same Tori Taylor, like, charisma. Just,
oh, yeah.
But then also, like, he's the best punter that's ever lived, seemingly.
Yeah.
Like, once in a lifetime sort of talent and all-encompass person there.
Yep.
Never hated Tori. Obviously, we had, you know, basically since right before your time, Keith Duncan. Drew has been great. Like, had it pretty good on the special team side of things. And yeah. I would like to say that, like, even through my senior year, there was some questions. And that was 2017. So, okay. For the past 6 years or so, like since Miguel Racinos and on, we've been pretty good. Like there hasn't been a lot of questions. There was a moment in 2014, and hopefully that most players don't have to go through this, but maybe they do, and maybe you have something similar. But in 2014, the three starters got brought in, and Coach White at the time, you don't know him, but he looked at us and he was like, the team doesn't trust you guys. Like,
and
no one necessarily has like a great view of like your reputation off the field either. Like, and at the time I was young, we had another young, like the punter was young, it was bad. So like, there was a moment of like, you guys have to fucking figure it out or we're in trouble and like, you're not going to have a job. And so it hasn't always been that way, but yeah, when you get to the front of the room, you can kind of feel the eyes looking at you.
Yeah.
It's not just the coaches. It's the other guys. They're like, okay, well you're in seat one. You're supposed to be the guy. You're supposed to know how things are done. And you had that for, like you said, 4 years. I mean, you became a starter in my notes 21, right?
Yeah. First game of 21.
So I mean, and you played several games in your true freshman year in 2020.
Yeah, I mean, one was Minnesota, and we took a kneel, and they say Paul Suck sent us out there just for that one.
Let's go.
And so just burn that red shirt, I guess, real quick. But we were out there, and they came, that made me not like Minnesota because they came off the ball and hit us hard. And it's like kind of a, I'm sure you know, like unwritten, like
Oh yeah.
If it's a kneel down, like, yes, you have to give effort 100% of the plays, like, but let's not, you don't want to cause a fight. You don't want to, you know, the game's over.
So you got a little chest punch after not doing anything for 3 hours.
Yeah. And the worst part was, I think it was mid November or something. It was a night game. Oh, yeah. I remember. And we're freezing. Like, I got long sleeves on, we're freezing. And then, you know, the helmet's stiff because you're taking it off and everything's just ice cold. And then you just get one hit right to yourself on a kneel down where you're like, you know, they're probably not going to come across the ball.
I've always heard about that with linemen. So when it's cold, it's bad. Like hitting somebody is bad. Man, it's like everything is dry and it scrapes and like cold is just not good. Yeah. Is it that way every rep for a lineman? Or do you settle in on a drive and you're like, okay, I'm sweating a little bit now, I'm moving, it's not as bad? Or is every rep just horrible?
I mean, for me, I think it's as soon as I wake up. I wake up and brush my teeth and start sweating. I mean, ever since I've been a kid, like, my mom will tell you I'd sweat in the cradle and everything like that. But, you know, cold games, I learned the other day too. Again, I guess a lot of guys wear actual, like, thermal things underneath, like sleeveless thermal things. And I just wore the same undershirt I would normally because I've, you know, kind of a semi-superstition thing. But
sure.
No, I'm a big time sweater. So, I mean, once I get going, like, I'll be fine. I think it's just the in between drives that you're talking about. Like, you got to stay, like, at least warm, lukewarm, you know, on the sideline with the coats and the benches. And we had dilemmas definitely on the sideline. You know, I think it was probably this year, like, they turn on the heated benches a little too early in the year. So then the guys were really put off and, like, really wanted, like, no heat ever. And I'm like, guys, like, I get it, you know, the toughness. I'm all for it. But I need to stay warm in between drives, like, so I can go out there and, like, not worry about pulling something. So, like, we got to have it on at some point. So I think I definitely Nebraska and I think maybe Wisconsin, we might have had them on. So only got them on for two games. But, you know, it was 4-1 on that argument most of the time.
I don't even know if we had the heated benches yet. Maybe in my senior year.
Really?
So, like, when we went on the road and there were heated benches, we were like, oh, yeah, this is.
Oh, basically. Not even an advantage.
Yeah, and you're going to have similar moments in like 7 to 10 years. Hopefully you're still playing in the league at that point, but you're going to look back at the Hawks, you know, in 2035, and you're going to be like, oh, we didn't have any of what you guys have now. I'm 30 now. It, like, feels old. So
yeah.
I'm still old enough to back when, like, we didn't even get – and this sounds very greedy. I understand for everyone listening, the niceties of being a Division I football player, but, like, my first 2 years – the meals were like, even the scholarship guys just got 4 dinners a week. That was it.
Yeah.
I mean, you're a guy who gained 60 pounds.
Yeah. They've come a long way.
That would have been tough to do on the old Hillcrest food, or I guess for you guys, it was Peterson, but
what was the move? If it wasn't, like, you know, the dinners they provided, were you guys, like, going into, like, for the guys who had to gain, I mean, this might not be a question for you, but a guy who had to gain 60 pounds, like they had, like, it had to be just,
yeah, it was the grocery bills was just crazy. I mean,
they probably bought like half a cow or a full cow. Like,
yeah, probably. That sounds right. The problem is too is, like, for the freshmen, there's nowhere to put. Like, you have a dorm fridge.
Oh,
right?
yeah.
So
and the stipend's lower and everything. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, I don't know.
All right.
We walked uphill both ways. that kind of thing. Luckily, I didn't have to gain a lot of weight like you did. But, like, sitting on that for a second, like, 60 pounds, right?
Yeah, I think.
Or more.
I always say, like, 250 when I first came in. I might have been, like, 53. It might have been 48, you know, give or take whatever. But I got up to – I was right around 312 my last 3 years, like, all the time. So,
and what are you right now?
It's about 60 pounds. Right now I'm just under 310, I think, like 309, maybe 310. I shaved off a couple pounds trying to speed that 40 up.
Trying to run a little faster.
Yeah, just, you know, you can always gain weight. I know how to gain weight. I can tell them that.
Yeah, I wondered if that was intentional, just because there are a lot of games that guys kind of play in this unique spring that you're in right now. For me, unfortunately, I had to put on 30 pounds.
Yeah.
Because I played at like 215, 220. I wasn't going to grow any taller, but they need guys to be big in the league to like fill a gap, basically not get run through. So I put on 30 pounds worth of Fairlife chocolate milk.
I was about to say that had to be just straight dairy products all the time.
Half a gallon of chocolate milk every day. I mean, I was on that lineman grind. Like I was, and it worked. But I mean, how did you approach it? What did it look like for you?
So I probably wasn't the healthiest person when I do all this stuff. Like not in a eating.
Nobody is.
Not the type of food, but like I'm always on the guys about like making weight. Cause if for me, I could gain weight just like that. I know I was saying I was a sweater earlier, but like I could gain 3 pounds in one meal. You know, I can eat enough, I think is the biggest thing. Like some guys just can't flip a switch in their head to maybe eat that much. But so I was kind of a stickler about that. But for me, it was, you know, I had COVID. That helped out a lot because I was literally just at home, you know, air frying in my house and like getting shredded, I went and bought like a rusty weight set, you know, because it was like, what are we going to do for workout? We can't go to the gym. So
yeah, didn't they bring like squat stands to some of the guys' houses?
I think they did.
But you were young, so you probably weren't.
For the guys who lived around Iowa City, I think they built something. Wow. Like at someone's house. Like I want to say either Doyle built a thing at his house. Cause I remember, I think Linderbaum and the guys in like Cedar Rapids or something, like they did something and put some work together or something like that. But no, I mean, you had to scrap around the weights, you know, figure it out, find them. I heard Els was talking about that with you when he was on here too, you know, with his buddies. So, but yeah. And then, you know, food wise, you know, they'd send up some things like to help us. Like, I think it was, so for me, it was the 42s,
core powers.
Yeah. I almost forgot the name. I haven't had one. I haven't seen one in a while.
No, they'll never leave you, brother. They'll never leave.
My mom won't let them. She loves them. She had me order a bunch of them just so she could have some
for her. Yeah. Oh, legend.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, she, like the 42 grams of protein. Actually, this would probably be a great time to talk about the Iowa Egg Council down there. dude, seriously, that's great. Like if dude, I mean, I don't know how much you care or even know about nutrition, but like people don't eat enough protein. Like they just don't. They just don't.
No, you gotta up it.
And definitely. If you can get 42 grams of protein in one of those drinks, you're doing pretty well. I'll talk about the Iowa Egg Council in a little bit. 6 grams of protein per egg, by the way. Are you a big egg guy?
I am right now, but right now they're tough to find, obviously.
Oh, dude, they're like gold bars.
Yeah, they are. They might be worth more than Bitcoin, but I had my buddy up here. He got them from a farm nearby, so I'm getting the hookup. You know, you gotta deal around. There's egg dealers out there on the streets now. You got to find them.
Bro, I mean, a farmer connection right now is more valuable than anything.
Oh, yeah. It's better. You might as well hire a farmer over a finance guy to, you know, manage your finances right
Seriously.
Now.
Seriously.
They're probably worth more. But, you know, other than the core powers, I also did the Gatorade protein bars. A lot of those, you know, I did one before, one as soon as I woke up, one when I went to bed, I think maybe one after the workout. But later down the road, I realized they have 30 grams of sugar and 20 grams of protein in them.
Yeah.
So realistically, I could have had a 280 pound and like been looking real good. Instead, I don't know. Sugar right after a workout's fine, but before bed, it wasn't the best choice, I think.
Well, so there's a give and take, right? Like,
right.
What they're asking you guys to do is, and I don't know how aggressive they were with your weight goal, right? Like I assume it was somewhat aggressive. I know that I've talked to and had teammates that had a lot more to do. Like, like Ike Butker, I think he went from like 240 to 320. I want to say Cole Crosston, which was, he was a year older than me. I think he put on like 80 or 90 pounds, like more than just 50 or 60. And when you're trying to do that, even when it's spread out over, I don't know, a year or 2 years, like the problem is you come in and, I mean, this wasn't your problem specifically or really anybody in your class, but generally you've got like this 2 year window where you need to start finding some legitimate playing time or at least some reps with the twos, or you got to bust through somehow. And if you're going to bust through at the Division I level at the on a lineman position, either defense or offense, you better weigh close to 300 pounds. Like that's just the way it is. And so you kind of have to work fast on that. And so the weight goal bumps every week. I'm sure you felt like it was just like, I can never catch up. Cause that once I make my weight there, it's three higher again. Like,
yeah, I was talking about COVID with you. That was the nice thing too, is, you know, like I said, I came in at 250. I probably gained maybe 10 pounds in that first 8 weeks of, you know, before spring break. And then I came back in the summer and I was 288 maybe.
Wow.
So that was the big period there. That, like I was saying, wow. March, April.
You did some work, dude.
Yeah. April, May, I did some work. Definitely. That was probably the most fun I've had, like just being an athlete. Cause you didn't have the competition. You didn't know what was going to happen. You're just, I'm just going to work out ready for whatever. And then from there, it was, I think, 10 pounds a year. So the going into,
which isn't horrible.
Yeah. Yeah, no. So it was just 10 pounds a year, you know, a pound a month, if you will.
Not hard.
No, not hard. So definitely gained that. And that helps the weight room numbers go up too and stuff like that. So
you were there in spring of 20.
Yeah.
So did you forgo like your last semester of high school then?
I did. Yeah. Okay. It was me and two others, Yelverton and Gavin Williams, you know, who both were with us, but it was just us three who early graduated. But I did meet friend of a friend, Zach Kluver, your brother.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you would have come in like directly with Zach then.
That's right. It was us four and then Phelps. We were all like,
yeah,
the youngest of the young that semester.
And what a weird time to come in, man. I mean,
yeah.
Do you ever think about that? Like how just completely abnormal of a situation you guys had to work through?
Yeah, I mean, it was wild. Like I remember first getting there, it was everything I expected. And then it just changed to a new thing kind of while I was there. I didn't know I was still growing with everything. So like They kept me, you know, with the freshmen in the summer, which was annoying because then I had to restart and do the, you know, I was still a Devo one, but the eccentric squats, obviously it's like, dude, I did these 3-4 months ago, but those and, you know, obviously transitioning in the weight room and stuff like that. But, you know, a lot of it stayed the same, I think. And at the end of the day, like I didn't want to transfer anything like that. And, you know, I lost my position coach too, like after that year. So it was just a lot of changes, but I think just the brand and Coach Ferentz stayed the same. And that's the real reason I chose it. So,
Fuck, that's crazy. You're in the middle of COVID and Polisek takes the job at, Wyoming. Yeah.
Yep.
Do you remember that day you get that text or he brings you guys in and tell, like, what was that like?
Yeah. It's kind of,
that, you know, I mean, cause you've been there, like you said, for a few months.
Yeah. I mean, well, that was just a few months and then it was a couple months after the season and he's, you know, there was one rumor he's going to take a Montana State job or something like that. He came in as like, guys, I'm not doing it. I'm not leaving. And then, you know, he got the OC job. So he obviously was like, he was interested in something else, but you know, I don't blame him. He's an offensive minded guy and he coached quarterbacks, but Coach B's the best. He's very intense and you know, there's a lot of connections up here that I've heard about it. And I've only had good things to say about him because, you know, I owe him everything for bringing me to the university. And he was the main recruiter for me and everything. So,
yeah, I mean, he's a legend. And now he's a national champion.
Right.
Which is so sick.
First year. That's awesome.
Unreal. He's a guy who I wish everyone could meet.
Yeah.
Because his energy is next level.
Oh, my gosh.
We actually got to have him on the show, and he was fantastic.
Did you? I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's a great episode. For anybody listening that hasn't listened to that one, I want to say it's somewhere in the 300 episodes. 300? Just search Walk-Ons and Coach Tim Polisek. It'll come up. Wow. Dude, what that was a treat. Yeah. It was right after he took that Wyoming job, too. I think it was that summer.
Gotcha.
But he recruits you, and that's – so for me – and kind of the other guys that are usually here on this podcast, I didn't have a guy that recruited me, you know, like
yeah.
I was a long snapper. I did pay to get my foot in the door. I was a walk-on. I was going to do anything to play for the Iowa Hawkeyes. Guys like you have other options and I'm not sure what your recruiting looked like in high school and how many other offers you had, but like there had to be some other options that you considered. Whereas like, I didn't have that. So the guy who recruits you, the relationship that you create with the coaching staff through that process is really important. And Polisek, awesome dude, obviously great at recruiting, all of that stuff. And then he leaves. Like,
yeah.
Was there any sort of like, damn, like he's the reason I came here? Or by that time you had kind of been, you bought into the system. You were there and you're like, okay, I'm a Hawkeye now. I'm good without him. Because it happens a lot. A guy that recruits somebody leaves, and then the guy he recruits, you know, they transfer out or something like that.
Yeah, it was really interesting. And up until that point, you know, I'd kind of gotten to know the guys, and being an older guy, even though we had a shortened season with COVID, like I got to know the older guys of Lindy and Cody and Shooter and, you know, Banwart, those guys, just getting around those guys in the building and everything, understand how they work. And then also the practices and stuff. And it was just so special to me. And I remember, I think Coach Ferentz was getting a gauge, you know, how he does throughout the day, goes down the weight room, you know, walking around. But I think
Mason, how you doing?
Yeah. You're all right. Good. He'd go and, you know, ask, I think just a bunch of the younger guys really, like, you know, are they doing all right? Because he knew, you know, it's a popularity to transfer if your position coach left. And I think a couple guys did, but, you know, for the most part, a lot of us stayed. And I think it, you know, helped us out a lot, you know, just understanding there's a lot more to Iowa than just your position coach, but that's a big part of it, obviously. And a lot of guys nowadays transfer for worse reasons, but
yeah, for sure.
But, you know, they have a big impact on you. But there's more to that. And I think Coach Ferentz was the biggest reason I stayed and chose Iowa in the first place. So, like I remember it. I had a gut feeling like I should commit on my official visit. Like, I needed to. And I think 2 days later I did, because I wanted time to think it over, you know. But, yeah.
Special guy, Coach Ferentz.
Yeah.
In your farewell Instagram post, which was great, by the way, had a lot of good stuff in it. But I think you talked about – the one thing you will miss for sure, maybe the most of anything, is Coach.
Yeah.
What's your relationship like with him? And over, you know, you get to develop that pretty good over 4 or 5 years, especially a guy like you who gets thrown in. He's an O-line guy, so he probably spends a little bit more time with your guys' room or around you guys at practice. Like, you're walking away from the University of Iowa right now. What kind of impact? I could tell you the impact, because I know, but what do you think kind of impact KF will have on the rest of your life?
I mean, I think he's a great thing to put on the resume. Like, I think my resume should just be a picture of him and say, I worked for him for 4 years. So
I know this guy.
You can't give me any worse treatment, not treatment, but like coaching. You know, he's obviously like me and Coach. I appreciate him more than anyone in the world. He's given me all he had. And, you know, we've only had a positive relationship. Like, that's the thing I think for me is I was never a guy he really had to worry about. I know some guys like have a certain relationship with him because he's always grabbing him for academics or, you know, this or that. But for me, it was just football, only football. And, you know, even off the field, we were talking about, you know, conference realignment and, you know, different things like that, because he knows I had an interest in some of that stuff. But he, you know, every day at practice, I remember those first 2 years, he was really like, he was on me all the time, I think, because I was a young guy getting thrown in there and needed coaching really bad. And
because they needed you. A couple minutes ago, when you're talking about the whole transfer situation, I was about to say, dude, if you or anybody else transfers out about 3-4 years ago, we are looking. I mean, we are literally trying to pick people up off the street to play line for us, because we had we had Lindy leave early, Werfs leave early around that time period. Couple guys medically retire, a couple other guys retire, a couple guys transfer, and all of a sudden that room was like, whoo.
Yeah, it shrunk quick in 2 years, and I got really young, really fast. But he, you know, through it all, like, he was always like, it had our backs, had my back, I think. And, you know, but towards those end of the, you know, my fourth and fifth year, I remember it wasn't as much of a, like, he wasn't always watching me, I'd say. And he was the number one guy. Like, I got to make sure Coach isn't on me. Like, I got to make sure Coach knows I'm giving my all, like, you know, because he's always obviously watching the O-line. He's down there with us. You know, he could be standing 100 yards away. He's still like peeking over, making sure we're working. And, you know, he's the best. But there was one thing I was going to say. Oh, and I think this year, I mean, I don't know if it's why we had a good year, but I remember during camp, like, he doesn't normally come into our position room and like very often, because I think he knows, you know, what it's like to be a position coach, and especially coach the O-line, which is 20 guys, which basically makes it, you know, a whole team itself.
He doesn't micromanage at all.
No, not at all. And I remember I think he just went to Indy and said something about, like, you know, the line's going to be good or something along those lines. And, like, he came in during, like, first day of training camp, first meeting, like, we have position, you know, team meeting, go right to the position room. he comes in and says, like, I want you guys to know, like, I truly meant those words. Like, you guys have a chance to be good. And we had no – he had no reason to say any of these things. Like, we had not proven anything for – in 22 and 23.
There were some questions.
Yeah, 22 was bad. 23, you know, we had a little growth, even though you might not have seen it. But, like, he came in, and I think that just reassured us a little bit. Like, yeah, you know what? Like, why not, you know? And he always knows the right thing to say at the right time, so –
So I get a little bit of goosebumps listening to that because it's sick when a coach – it's only sick when a coach says that and you know he means it.
Yeah.
Because there's coaches and I'm sure people listening, if you played sports or you, Mason, have had those guys like – or just regular people in your life. They'll say shit. It doesn't carry a lot of weight.
Sure.
You know – you and I both know KF doesn't say something unless he actually means it. There is no bullshit.
Oh yeah.
So when he says
and he doubled down, like that's even more, you know.
Well, so from the media side of things on the outside, we're kind of previewing the year last year. We're like, all right, the line needs to be good this year.
Yeah.
we gotta have something. and he comes out in the middle of camp and says something to the media. He don't say shit to the media. He's never gonna like give you something, right? And he comes out and says, the line's going to be good. Like, the line's much improved. Yeah. Like, the line is good. Something along those lines. I remember talking about it on the podcast, and I was like, people take note of this. Because this, if he's saying this, he believes it. Like, and he's seeing it true. And he knows a thing or two about football. And then you come out, and of course, there's growing pains in the another crazy sort of part to your career as you finish your last year on a new offensive coordinator.
Yep.
A lot of changes around in your career, but like, I mean, you guys crushed in the running game. I mean, like arguably best in the country. Had a lot of steps that you took in the passing game. A lot of great stuff on a short kind of leash, a short playbook of like what Coach Lester could get in, you know, his first year in the program. And so he was right. Like he was right. And it had to feel good.
Yeah.
For you.
It felt great. I mean, we had a meeting at the end of the year. It was emotional just thinking because we're just talking about like how far we've come and like because like 22, like we could have all very well have been fired. Like if it was an actual job, we would have all been fired. Like everybody, like clean house. They would have sold the company. You know, in other words, like no, actually, it's worse than that. They would have filed for bankruptcy because no one would buy it.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to hear you talk about it like this because I can hear the maturity and the vulnerability and like the security that you have now 2-3 years later of like, yeah, we weren't good. And now, and we got there.
I mean, there was times I remember we were like, yeah, I think we played good against Wisconsin that year. And we went back and watched the tape and we played terrible. And it was like, that was the idea of good back then. So it's just the standard got raised, you know, in 23, it got raised. And then in 24, it got raised again. Like obviously, especially for us as a group. And that was the biggest thing is like, we understood what it meant to play good and, you know, give to the team what we need to provide the team with. You know, it didn't have to be spectacular, but it had to be good enough.
The way you describe that makes me think you guys were in such a tough spot. And everybody on the outside is trying to figure it out. Why can't these guys what's not clicking, right?
Yeah.
And like the amount of times, and I probably talk shit about you guys multiple times, I'm sure. People could go clip it.
I don't think I could meet someone who hasn't. I try
as a former player and you get sucked into it because when you talk for hours and hours, eventually you're gonna say something that sounds dumb. But I try as a former guy, knowing how hard you guys are in there busting balls, right? I know you're not in there trying to blow an assignment, right? I know you're in the off season grinding through 85 for 5 on squad. I know what you're doing. I know you guys are trying.
Yeah.
But for a couple of years there, it was just too early. Sometimes that's okay if it's a guy or a couple guys, but man, like very quickly.
It was all five.
I wrote it down here. I was like very quickly. Literally, my note says quickly shapes up to be him, Colby, Jones, DeYoung, Ellsbury. Like, we've known you. The offensive line names have been the same for 4 years. And it's like, okay, Well, yeah, looking back, like year one's going to be pretty bad.
Yeah.
Because you guys all had to go through it at the same time. And it was like, it's funny how you say you watch the Wisconsin game, you thought you played good, you watch it back and you're like, oh no, we did not play good. Was it literally just a situation of like, there wasn't enough left in the room to really show us what the standard was. So you guys just literally had to grind out your own standard over time.
Yeah, I think, you know, you mentioned earlier the injuries and the guys retiring and transferring. Like, we lost – the room got really small. So, like, someone – like, a couple of guys had to step up. And, like, the most experienced guys in 22 after that 21 season were me and Colby.
Yeah.
Realistically, like, snap count-wise, I'm pretty sure. And – Connor was going into his second year. Like, the guy just took, you know, 1 or 1.5 Spanish. You know, he's not ready for
that guy was playing Linmar 18 months ago.
Yeah, exactly. He's, you know, and me, like, I played left tackle and, you know, lost my mind in 21, like, just trying to keep up with some guys. But you know, I think just mentally for us, it was just like, it was a lot of taxing and a lot of a weight on our shoulders that didn't have to be there, but like, there was nothing we could do about it. Like, we had to step up. So we tried our best in 21, you know, or I mean in 22, excuse me. And, you know, came back in 23, I think we proved a lot of things right. And then, you know, finally started clicking 24 when we had enough experience and confidence, you know, to without being too confident. I think we might've been too confident in 22, you know, with some situations, like, just thinking because we had the logo on the side of our head, we were going to play a certain way at O-line. But,
yeah,
you know, we learned through that year, through the hard times, like, how important it is to do certain things right. And, you know, that was the things we took into those big games, you know, from then on.
When I was at Iowa, Twitter wasn't allowed. And you couldn't tweet. You could have it, but you couldn't tweet.
Yeah.
So I would say the social presence – and just the fact that that's a term sucks. But the social presence of the team was like, yeah, guys weren't really online, like, seeing as much. Nowadays, it's everywhere. Like, you got me talking about you on a Monday, and it's like, okay, this former long snapper is telling me how to do my job. Like, this sucks. But I point that out because, like, how aware were you guys early on in those 22 and 23 seasons of, like, the criticism? Like, did you hear any of it? I know KF says, Hey, don't listen to the outside noise, Lauren.
Yeah.
They don't know shit about shit. But, like, you know, there are people that know a little, they're a little bit knowledgeable about football. It's very clear, like, what positions are doing okay and what positions need work. And, like, the offensive line needed work. How much did you ever see of that? Or was it like, did you guys try to just keep it blinders on? Let's just focus on ourselves.
Yeah. I remember when we went 3-4 that part of that year, like, that was the first time I think I've personally ever had, like, a losing record. And I'm sure a lot of guys, same way.
Sure.
Especially you guys at the University of Iowa, you know, a high institution who were probably on good high school teams. But, like, that was the time when we're like, you know what, let's turn off all this stuff. I remember, like, Petras had comments after games and, you know, people would react a certain way. And then he came back against Purdue. And after, I think we were neither 5-4 or 6-4 at that point, I think we were probably 6-4. And, like, he just said, like, you guys gave up on us 2 weeks ago. And that's when I understood. And Coach Ferentz, you know, brings that stuff up in meetings. Like, when guys, you know, do things like that and kind of follow the things he's talking about, right? The, you know, the examples he has, like, turn away from the media. Like, it's just not good. And I've known it too. Like, every time I look at it, there's good and bad. You got to take the bad with the good, obviously. But, you know, we always say, like, if a media guy's patting you on your back, he's looking for somewhere to stab you with the knife, right?
And yes, sir.
That's all I took all the media stuff for. Like, I'll be your best friend for 20 minutes, but I ain't going to get a beer with a media guy or, you know, talk about anything else. Like, there's a lot of things you got to take it with. And, you know, for us, it was just about understanding what mattered and how those things didn't impact how we played. It was all on us.
That's really tough. That's really tough for a 20-year-old kid. Like, I'm 30 and I'm in the real world now, kind of. Not really. I do a podcast and I'm not a real person with a real job. But, like, even like criticism of this podcast, which is something I put a lot of time into, like, it's now my thing, right?
Yeah.
I'll see that as a fully grown adult and be like, God, these motherfuckers don't know.
Yeah, they
like,
don't know.
You know, like you get that chip on your shoulder, but it affects you mentally. And like mental health is a huge thing. And there's a lot of guys who like you start reading too much, you start to believe it. Or the fact that you reminded me of that Petrus when he came out and said, "You guys gave up on us." Oh, that fight that lit a fire under over here. We love that. That was so sick when he said that. I'm a big Petrus guy.
Yeah, me too. Hard not to be. It's a lot of people put it on him, but he's got a great arm. I think he had a tough line and tough situation, you know, those 2 years where he was kind of the only fifth year on the whole offense.
Yeah. I mean, also just the fact, like, I truly don't know if anybody's ever taken more shit than him talking about the online stuff
in America. Probably not.
I'm seriously like,
yeah.
And he was so good. He stepped up to the media every week. Like, it was so respectable. We got to have him on last year around this time as he was going into this last season over at Utah State, and what a guy. And he has a great KF impression too.
He's got a good one. He's really good at impression. He's hilarious.
He's awesome. It's good to hear that as much as you guys could, you kept it in house, because in the end, like, this podcast, the other podcast, the Twitter, like the media guys, it's all bullshit. Like, it serves no purpose for you guys on the inside when you're in there. It could derail some things. Like, it could really get to people's heads. So that's good, because there was plenty to look at, I'm sure. And it's not that you guys, like, that's the other thing I always come back to is, like, it's not like you guys didn't know you had to get better. Like, you know, like,
I was the hardest. You can say whatever you want or whatever. I'm the hardest critic of myself. Like,
right.
There's nothing you can say that's going to make me too butthurt, like, about my own self. Like, it's sure. I hate the way I play just as much as the fans did. more because, you know, they only see the sacks and the tackles for losses, not the blow, you know, the four play that could have been 10.
You
know, that sort of deal. So
yeah, you have to live with every play. They just remember like the big.
They only remember all the bad. You know,
you're the one who walks into the. We've tried to describe this feeling, but you walk into the facility the next day after a loss or after a bad personal performance.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like you just want to jump off a building.
it's brutal. And I could tell you the amount of times on at least two hands that I felt that way. And even there's sometimes, you know, what's worse, honestly, is when you win and do it. Cause that's when you got to learn, like, hey, you still got stuff to work on, dude. Like, you're not the complete reason we won that game. So don't feel too good about yourself.
Yeah. Quick moment to recognize the Egg Council. I mentioned them earlier, sponsor of the podcast this month. Mason was talking about how he's eating eggs. He's eating eggs right now. Lean guy, probably. Trying to stay lean. Great source of protein, 6 grams of protein per egg. This is a great partnership because, unlike other companies who are trying to sell you something, Iowa Egg Council, similar to the pork producers. We've worked with the pork producers before as well. They literally just want you to eat more eggs. Iowa, Mason, don't know if you know this, largest producing egg state in the country.
I did not know that.
You want to take a guess at how many eggs Iowa produces each year?
It's the largest in the country.
It's with a B.
Okay, thank you. I was going to see if I could get that first letter. I'll go 173 billion.
It's not that high. It's 15 billion eggs.
Okay.
Which is still insane. That is so many eggs.
I guess I didn't account for bird flu, so that's all me.
Well, that'll take some of them out. But yeah, like something like 45 million hens laying 15 billion eggs a year. If you guys, I guess if you guys want to bulk up and put on a ton of muscle like Mason, you could just purely switch over to eating eggs. But I imagine eggs, I mean, dude, when Gray's would come and it was Gray's, right? Or was it somebody else that came to serve like those breakfast omelets or burritos?
Stella.
Oh, Stella would serve. Yeah. Yep. Oh, God. Yep. Get some eggs in there. A lot of eggs served over at the complex in plenty of different ways. And actually, funny enough, as we move on, thanks to the Iowa Egg Council. Shout out to them for this month, next month, and another month later this year. On for 3 months right now. You said one thing you didn't or would not miss, Mason, would be the refuel sandwiches.
Yeah.
I kind of like those.
Nah, you should be arrested if you think those things are good.
You're talking about the ones in the foil, right? That you could like put the jelly on.
They're in foil, just boiling in that pan every morning.
Yeah.
No, I mean, listen, I could do it. Like I went for with it for a while. I remember I would come in and like when I was the younger guy in 20 and 21, I'd be like, you guys think Sheriff was eating these every day? Hell yeah, he was. Like, how do you think he became an All-American? Because of these things. Like I bought in with all of it. Tried to sell as many guys as I could. Like that I was doing it better, but they're one of a kind, that's for sure.
Oh, there's a lot of I remember those were like introduced like maybe my second or maybe our last year, and it was like once like it's like Monday or Tuesday the special teams meetings are like 7:45 and
yeah,
you're like it's after a lift for some guys and you got to go grab one of those things before you like yep. drag your ass in your gray sweats over to the meeting room and you put that in your mouth, it's just like it's cardboard. This is cardboard.
Yeah. There's a lot of that stuff. I mean, it's hard to cater, you know, one sandwich for 2 hours a day,
man.
And with eggs on it, you know, obviously they're going to get a little dry. You know, there were days when you had to do it for the weigh-in.
A guy like you, you absolutely had to. I don't think people understand eating is quite literally like a part-time job.
Yeah.
For the bigger guys. New
this year was they put out Pico with it.
Really?
That changed it. I'll tell you that. Like that made the thing good. It made it a, you know, a refuelé sandwich, you know, like had a twist to it. It made it a lot more manageable and better to have. So I did that and they put Frank's Red Hot and Cholula. So you could basically just cover the thing and like take out all the downfalls of it by spicing it up a little bit.
The food stories out of a Division I football program are always great. Kevin, who's usually on the show, his older brother played as well. He was a year ahead of us. And one year in camp, he was an offensive lineman. Him and another lineman had a contest just during the days within the camp to see who could eat more chicken breasts.
Oh, throughout camp?
Just throughout camp. And back then, camp was like 22 days, 23.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think one of them ended
That's
up.
That's awesome.
They ended up eating like 64 chicken breasts in 22 days or something like that. It was something.
Geez, that's like almost three a day.
Almost three a day.
Like basically one and a half at lunch and dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
I would get tired of the taste. You'd have to, it's like the Forrest Gump. You'd have to make chicken in, you know, the amount of ways that Bubba says.
Right.
Like, that's how many times you'd have to change it just to make it bearable.
Was there, I mean, it's generally the most common answer, but was there a favorite cater meal for you?
Oh, I'm going back soon. So I'm excited to, because ever since I've left, I'll be honest, I miss it. I miss
all. You're going to miss meals. It forever,
like,
bro.
The good and the bad, like just to get a carb. A protein, even if I don't have the whole thing. You know, I liked they started bringing in Finkbein. I won't count that. That was this year.
Really?
Yeah, they added that one. The Bumps restaurant, that's a good place. But Stella, I like Stella the best because I think guys don't like it because, you know, they spray the canola oil on and it's the same pan. And so it sometimes, you know, it gets lost in kind of the same taste-ish and, you know, some of the chicken's sure. made the same way or whatever, but you can make it whatever you want. So you sure. can't get mad at it if you're not making it right. That was my thing, is you can make it whatever you want and you can change it every time. Yeah. So like you could get nachos, you know, they started putting a quesadilla, like a couple of griddles out there and you could cook up a quesadilla on there. So
oh, yeah,
that was always good. And it was brunch. So you could do, you know, I might just do chips and dip just cause I want it right now, you know, not an omelet. But definitely still those guys do it right.
I remember when Hy-Vee would come in, they'd have like those big muffins at the end of the I'm telling
you couldn't eat those. I could never, even as a lineman, I don't think I could finish one of those. Those things were massive.
So I'm telling you right now, like fatty Tyler Kluver back in 2016-17, I would eat two at the
beach. Okay. I thought you were going to say three. If you said three, that was going
to
be bad.
I would take two home for lunch, like as the dessert piece to lunch. Dude, I would put four muffins on my plate, and then they'd sit in my locker during practice.
Really?
Oh, my God. Same thing with, like, the cookies that Grays would bring.
No, those are dangerous. I couldn't grab those. I feel like Coach Ray was like right behind me every time. I'd always like make a call out to the guys if strength coach is like waiting in line with us. I'm like, hey, watch out. Watch out. They're taking, they got a notepad out too.
I got over that early because I just like, they were already maxing out the amount of shit they could give me. So like calling me fat or like, you know, calling out my dessert choices. It was like, just going to add to it. It didn't matter. What was it like blocking for a guy like Caleb Johnson?
It was great. I get that question a lot. He made a lot of those holes open and took advantage of a lot of like tight windows, I think, too. And, you know, he's just a great – I think he's a great story because I don't think anyone saw it coming, like
no.
What he was going to do. You know, I've heard of the Josh Jackson. Like that was Caleb this year. Like, you know –
wow, great comparison, dude. I didn't think about that. That is very similar, yes.
Yeah, like he was one of the last – no, not he wasn't the last picks. I picked him last year for Hawkeye Championship because I'm like, this guy is huge. He's fast. Like, he'll get us some points in the conditioning drill or the, you know, strength drills.
Yeah.
And he couldn't, like, buy into a lot of team stuff. And I'm like, dude, like, what are you doing? And he must have been working out or, like, you know, watching film because he popped off this year. And, like – no, I don't think anyone saw it coming. Like, obviously, he had the first half suspension against Illinois State. And we should have just done that, like I tell people, that his first year. And he would have had, you know, 10,000 yards rushing over 3 years. But
– yeah, he's – first of all, he's built like Superman.
Oh, my gosh. That guy, he doesn't even – like, I don't even think he needs to eat a salad and he'll just have a six-pack all the time, you know.
And genetics. There's just a couple of those guys on the team.
Always. Every year.
And it's like – bro, what are you on, dude? Like, your genetics are insane. I remember, I think this was just before your time, but wide receiver named Brandon Smith. I think he's still bouncing around.
Oh, B. Smith, yeah. No, I played that 2020 season with him. He was the exact same. Like, just
bro. Oh, my God. And it is crazy because, like, the public has gotten a little bit of that backstory of how Caleb was not fully – like on the teammate side of things, like bought in and then like he had to have a little bit of a come to moment of,
yeah,
I've got to do something to mesh with the team here. And boy, did he ever, I mean, was crazy. And then the talent just kind of took it from there. God, it was fun to watch you guys, man. It was this year.
Yeah.
I mean, when he would pop one off and then watching you guys celebrate and just like, oh God, those are the moments that like kind of take a former guy back. It was the celebrations. It was fun, man. Like, it had to be fun to celebrate in the end zone with him, dude. I mean, this is so cool. You're a starter for the record rushing touchdown season for probably a very long time. Like, that is going to be tough to be broken.
Yeah. That's, you know, I haven't even thought of that. Like, that record is also our record. I feel like,
yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
He did. There's a lot of times, you know, where I'm like, oh, that's blocked well, it's gone. But the coolest ones were where it's like, oh crap, you know, I missed that guy, and he still goes for 10. Like, those are the moments where it's like, oh, okay, I don't know. It's not like I don't have to block this guy very well. No, you still do, Mason and everyone else. Like, but there were games like when he'd always have like 200 yards, obviously, this year or something like that. Most games, or, you know, obviously more in some. And I remember there were games where it's like he is running for 200. We're not really blocking for 200. We might be blocking for like 75, 100, because I felt that before, and that's what I felt like. And he just, you know, would stiff arm a guy, spin off one, and run a guy over. And it was just – it's so energizing to an offensive line. Like, that makes you want to keep going.
I was
going to
say, does the play ever end and he got like 26 and you like go pick him up, you're running back to the huddle and under your breath, you're just like, thank you. Oh my God. Fucking thank you.
Oh, I go over and if I miss a block, I'm like, dude, thank you so much. Like, you made me look way, way better on that play. Yes. Like, yeah. Or if, you know, if they get stopped, like there'll be times when they're running and maybe they get 5 and they should have got 10. And it's like, my guy made the tackle. I'm like, I owe you one. I just tell him, like, it's not on you. Don't worry. I owe you one there. Like, I owe you one later. And I get him back a lot of the time. So
that's funny. Yeah. So how's this spring been? We tried to lock you down like a month and a half ago. And you're like, dude, I'm so busy right now. And it was probably a bad time for me to ask because
you're fine.
All of you guys were just getting settled into where you were training and draft prep, prepping, and this is like the biggest 3-month interview of your life. And it gets a little bit crazy. You know, we had Lachey on, he's out in Cali. Jay is down in Texas. I think Nick was in Miami. Like, everybody's in this different spot. Where did you end up training? And tell me a little bit about the past couple months.
Yeah. So, kind of like Els, I went north too. So I'm in Minneapolis right now.
You guys were here. Like, fuck it, we'll make it cold.
Yeah. I mean, keep me inside, make me warm and happy and fat and happy. And, I remember, so I traveled up here on the 31st. So we played the 30th.
Wow.
That was a brutal decision, but I'm glad I did it because I needed that day to get up here, and we did Pilates that Wednesday or whatever. So I'm up here in Minneapolis, and it's great. I think I like it up here. Like, it's still Midwest. It's a big Midwest city, obviously, and there's tons to do and a bunch of good food places. You know, for Minnesotans, I think that's the correct pronunciation.
Sure.
But yeah, I got up here the 31st, and then today's the 28th. So I'll leave tomorrow on the 1st, so it'll mark like 2 months straight. And it's flown by like almost faster than the winter phase. You know, we headed Iowa with the 8 weeks there. Like, that's how fast it's felt.
And wait a second. Who's your agent?
Yeah, so I was going to tell you that too.
Is it Searles?
Yeah.
So yes.
He was on here, wasn't he?
Yeah, dude, he comes on here all the time. He comes on like twice a year.
I love having him as an agent now this year. You know, I got him for a year where we beat Nebraska, so that's the good thing.
Yeah, true.
We'll see how good of an agent he is for me when they beat us. Probably better. He'll be in a better mood, you know, to help a Hawkeye.
Yeah, so. If Nebraska wins, you got to scam him for a meal or two. Like, hey, guess we should go out and celebrate. Like, you're going to have to buy, like, you know. And he will, because he'll be happy. He comes on here every year to preview the Nebraska game, and then and then he comes on like I think we've had him on like basically right after the draft to talk about, you know, kind of his experience as an agent and the craziness and his guys that he has each specific year. So this year we'll talk about you, which is so sick.
Oh yeah.
And he's just, I mean, you know, he does like radio stuff for Nebraska, and he has his own podcast, so like, he's great. Man.
The only thing you got to know is he lives in Lincoln. That's the number one thing. So the guy, you know, he left town obviously for a little bit to go to the NFL, and just went back there. So living in Lincoln, like, I've been there before too, and just knowing that, I know he's just, you know, surrounded by red all the time.
He unfortunately, like, he is such a great guy, because it is tough when they're Huskers. That's a tough one.
Yeah.
But he's a good dude, and I'm pretty sure probably why you picked him, you could tell me, but like, he's got that player mentality. Like, he knows what you're going through. He knows a lot of guys in the league. He's a great agent to have, man. Like, he's got to be awesome.
Yeah. I think having someone who played in the league is the biggest thing, because like, they can answer the questions without having to, you know, BS you like some answer. And like, he's a guy's guy. He's an O lineman. Like, that's just perfect for me. Like, guy who played in the league and who was an O lineman personality. Like, you know how we all are, and that's how I wanted it. You know, just comfortability and a good relationship and having a good conversation with him, and not like stressing about what you're gonna wear to this fancy place. Yeah. No, let's go to a hole in the wall bar. And get a beer and a burger or something, you know.
That's he'll talk hunt. Are you a hunter? You a big hunting guy?
He is. Or I'm not.
You're not. Okay.
Not yet.
But he would talk about hunting with you for about 6 hours probably.
We got him going for a whole lunch one day. So he loves it, and I think he's getting his son to hunt too. So he's just going to be out there even more. So
How you feeling? It's coming up.
Yeah, it is. Pro day. It's, you know, we're doing stuff every day. It's we haven't had the deload phase yet, so it's hard to know like what my numbers are, and that's what's really upsetting me is I'm like, dude, I feel slow in this. But, you know, we practice at the end of the week, so it's like, you know, we get to Friday and we have our practice sessions and times and stuff like that. It's like, well, you've also had a full week of, you know, hard workouts before this. So I'm excited though. I think, you know, I don't care if I was snubbed at the combine or something like that. Like, everyone was texting me about it. I'm like, it doesn't matter to me. Like, as long as you give me a date, like, that I need to show up somewhere and work out, that's good with me. You know, I don't care where it is. You know, that old mantra, like, if it's in a parking lot. No, obviously, I don't think I'd do it in a parking lot. That'd be pretty, you know, but the idea of, you know, this stage, that stage. It's like, it all builds up to the pro day for me. So I like that. Like the
Nick said the same thing. Nick Jackson was like, hey man, I get it, but I'm going to have this opportunity on pro day and I'm not going to flinch. Like,
that's
such,
right.
He was like, oh, it was such a sick quote. I think I clipped it. And like, I don't know if we put it out yesterday or,
yeah.
He's like, give me one opportunity and let's play ball.
This hell yeah.
So sick.
That's all you need. Like, that's the only shot you're going to get. Like a lot of people see it once and turn their eye away or keep watching. So you might as well make it one day too, instead of like, you know, this all-star game and meeting and visit and combine and this and then phone call. You know, you got one shot with everything here. So you got to always be ready and always assume someone's watching. So,
yeah. Feeling pretty good about the work you put in and how you're going to perform.
Oh yeah. I think, you know, up here I've gotten a lot stronger. I've moved my bench up like almost 10 reps now. And like, that's insane for me. And I didn't even expect that, but like that on top of, you know, the speed work's obviously great. It's different. And that was the thing for me. It was just about, you know, going somewhere that felt different. I felt so, too comfortable at Iowa, I felt like.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, you go there and you know, like, I know what they're going to do on Monday. I'm going back on Saturday. I texted Coach Ray. I said, what time do we start? And I'm already putting in my head, like, I already know they're going to have the rock mats out and this and that. And,
oh, yeah. Get the feet.
Do
a little wall warm-up.
Yeah. And
did you random question. Do you guys still do kettlebell warm-up?
Oh, yeah.
How about landmine warm-up?
Landmine warm-up?
Nope, you don't do it. See?
Like in the weight room?
Nope, it was out on the field.
They put those ones in the – we had them, but I don't think – we never
they
did
took,
a warm-up.
Yeah, they would put a barbell in the like, portable landmines, and they would load it with, a plate and a half or two plates for the line semi-skill. Yeah, that's old school stuff when we were tougher than you.
Then. Debatable.
Yeah, it is. I'm certainly not tougher than you.
We have to handle things in a different way than just the weight room. I'll tell you that. The social media presence and that puts a big magnifying glass on everything you do. But
for sure.
We had it. Everyone had it hard in their own ways. You guys definitely had it harder in camp. Coach Ferentz never forgets to put up those schedules. He'd compare ours to like 2013 or what was this year? 24. So this year was 2024. So he'd put 10 years ago in 14 and then 10 years ago in 04. We're like,
dude.
Yeah. I'd just be like, am I in shape? Like, that was my first question. Dude, like, these guys were doing it 3-a-days almost.
So that's it. Like, when we were doing 2-a-days, the older guys than us were having the same conversation. There's like, I think Woods, when he was at Iowa, I think they did 3-a-days.
Yeah.
And we're like, okay, well, that's absurd. Like, that is crazy. You guys don't even do 2-a-days now. And is there some rule like you can't do two, like, back-to-back full padded practices too?
That's some new rule. I mean, most of the time we're going pads and shorts anyways now.
Yeah.
Like, it's because it's the same either way, unless like the full pads was if I think we've even gone live with shorts on. So like, that's not the thing, you know,
anytime it's shorts, they're still, it's the same.
Shoot. The DBs and the wide receivers aren't going to wear knee pads anyway. So they're wearing the same thing.
No, they're going to show half of their thigh. And I could never get one of those size pants. I was trying my best. it's the same thing. 10 years from now, people will be like, oh yeah, you guys did it a lot harder than us.
Oh yeah. I can't, I'm glad to be able to say that one day, you know, when the guys are doing flag football.
Oh, it's because that's where it's going. I'm not going to take up too much more of your time, but I appreciate
you're good.
I appreciate coming on. We'll keep it at an hour. I think fans will get a kick out of, you know, hearing about the candid struggles of, I think they love the Ellsbury episode too. You guys were quite literally forged by fire and came out on the other side and are looking down the pipe at some successful careers at the next level, if I had to bet. And myself as a former guy and all the people listening we're just happy you were a Hawkeye, man.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. Everybody, hope you enjoyed the episode with Mason. Thank you guys for listening today. We'll be back again with somebody. I don't know. Maybe not. appreciate you. We'll see you next time. Peace. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you want more, you can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching Washed Up Walk-Ons. And if you're interested in supporting the show, head over to patreon.com/washedupwalkons where you can find bonus podcasts, merchandise, and other cool perks. Best part, half of your subscription benefits the kids at UI Children's Hospital. We'll see you next time. Hawks by a million.